Right now on Tech Radio, let's do the Tablet Tango.
Hi, I'm Artemis. I am a computer-generated AI voice, and you're listening to Tech Radio.
Every week online and on air with RT Radio, we bring you the very latest in tech from Ireland and, of course, across the world. Welcome to episode 1018, looking back on the seven biggest stories of the week, including Amazon making a huge change here in Ireland, a gift for your iPhone from Netflix, and, of course, brand new Apple iPads to drool over. And with our guest interview this week, we see if NFTs are dead or is the underlying tech still useful.
From techcentral.io. This is Tech Radio with Dusty Rhodes and Niall Kitson.
My name is Dusty. Joining me as always is our editor-in-chief, Niall Kitson. Let's talk about Apple and the new iPads in a few minutes. But first, local news here from Ireland. Amazon. Hallelujah!
I'm delighted. Oh, okay. Here, this is an interesting story because with Brexit, of course, we had all sorts of barriers to trade with the reliance on sterling, but also the exchange rate and delivery and paperwork and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It just became slower and more expensive to use, I think. Would you agree with that?
I never liked buying off Amazon.co.uk because there was always the sterling of things. And then there was also the delivery, both of which. And I think Brexit probably just made it worse.
Yeah. Well, of course, the alternative was to go to Amazon.de, which a lot of people did. Is there a .fr as well, if you're into...
There is a .fr. I don't know if there's a .it. I think everybody used the German one because it's available in English as well.
Yeah, yeah. The only thing was the few things that I bought came in German. So, like, I bought a DVD box set and... all the fonts and everything, the cover was all in German. So I was like, oh, please, God, don't have dubbed this as a matter of course. And no, it was in English with the option to change it. Actually, no, it was the other way around. It did come in German with the option to change it into, you know, the original English. So it gave me... A tense few moments while I figured it out.
Well, I hear though that the dark old days. I heard a strange phrase last night. It was in the good old days when times were hard. Anyways, the dark days of ordering on Amazon from the UK or Germany or anywhere else in Europe is over because.
Yeah, it looks like Ireland is getting its own Amazon website next year, 2025. So it's a little bit of a watch this space. I mean, Amazon does have a pretty good presence here in Ireland. It's two large fulfillment centres. And like when you say an Amazon fulfillment centre, you're not talking about even something IKEA size. You know, I mean, this thing is like...
It's massive.
Multiple football pitch size, stadium size centres.
Anybody who drives down to Nace, I mean, you just see it off there, off the Nace Dual Carriageway. And it's just, it's enormous. It almost takes 5 minutes to drive past it. That's how big it is.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll be getting our own site to go with it. Now, you would kind of hope that things would get better with these things, either quality of service or, you know, paying in the currency you're actually in, etc. Amazon have come out and said, okay, look, the way that we're going to make this better is, okay, we'll park the other things because we would assume those would be sorted. But Amazon has said there will be stocking an awful lot more local products, which is something I am quite excited about. So I want to see what we will be getting on Amazon.ie that potentially we would have no hope of getting elsewhere.
Leprechaun hats.
Oh, come on. Come on. You can do better than that.
I would still like to see all the stuff coming in from China. I know not everybody would agree with that. But Amazon to me, you see, is like, I don't know if you remember Hector Gray's. And it's just
Kind
of, all right. So it's just like kind of, it's a gadget paradise for cheap rubbish, essentially. All right. So, and I do kind of, you know, when I'm bored, I'll have a look at Amazon then. And there's usually something there for whatever. And I add it to my list and I wait until I've got like 50 quid's worth of rubbish. And then I order it all in one go, like, you know. So, to have it in Ireland, I just think is fantastic if they're able to deliver faster and to do the same day turnaround. But for gadget, and do you know what? Computer accessories and stuff like that, I find it very useful for as well. You know, SD cards or USB cards or any of that kind of stuff, or leads, that kind of stuff, like, you know.
Yeah, because a lot of stuff that you just can't get on the high street anymore.
Exactly. You know, especially now Maplin have gone, like, I can't think of anywhere. I mean, you can go into Currys, but I mean, they don't really have anything in there.
Currys, Power City, DID, I mean, they all do what they do and they all do it really well. Yeah. But if you're looking for...
they don't have the parts yeah. or little bits and pieces and that.
Yeah, exactly.
They're good for that kind of stuff. So anyway, Amazon coming to Ireland next year. That's number one good story. Number two good story. We are big fans, as everybody knows, of the BT Young Scientist exhibition, because every January we go down. Every January we're absolutely bowled away with the talent and the ideas and the execution of all the stuff that they're coming up with. So to help people participate easier this year, they've made a big change.
Yeah, they have. Yeah. If you want to participate in the BT Young Scientist and Technology Exhibition for 2025, usually you would have to wait for the other side of the summer holidays. But they have opened entries 3 months earlier than usual. So if you are into it and you have an idea you want to explore, now is a pretty good time to pitch something to your teachers. Because entries are open and will stay open until 5 p.m. on September 27th this year. You can find out more at btyoungscientist.com. I mean, every time, you're dead right, every time we go, we learn stuff. You know, we learn stuff, and just the level of creativity, whether it's in the social sciences, whether it's in material science, whether it's in technology, whether it's in chemistry, we always pick up something. So
the other thing I really like is, and neither of us did our Leaving Cert last year, so it's just to see the way that, you know, kind of these teenagers, 15, 16, are looking at technology and looking at life. And for me, it's kind of, I think it's amazing because they've never not known a connected life. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. They've grown up with tablets, smartphones, internet and everything like that. And the way they process that is just different.
That's this Gen Z we keep reading about, Dusty. Not old men like us.
If you know somebody that is interested in that, I definitely highly recommend it. If you ain't in, you can't win, as they say. The website is btyoungscientist.com. Let's get into the meat and potatoes this week, Niall. Apple's iPad announcement during the week, briefly, 30 minutes, thank God. We didn't have to sit through a whole 2 hours worth of Tim, et cetera.
Anyways, well, he's been working. Impressed? He's been working on his presence, Dusty. He's been working on his scripting. He wasn't as effusive as usual. There weren't the little vignettes. Oh, God, those awful little vignettes where people talk about how Apple changed their lives and how people start crying because these things are designed to make you cry and to get you to, you know, to make sure the products resonate with you on an emotional level, regardless of, you know, how well made they are. Although, in fairness, they are well made. It's just the level of manipulation really just grinds my gears. But yeah, you're right. None of that this time. It was just, here you go. Yep, we got this, boom. this. You care about this. So we're going to focus our time talking about it. And then all the other productivity stuff, we know you don't really care. There's probably like 10 people who want to know about the improvements to Final Cut or Adobe Premiere or what have you. So, you know, we'll shove that to the end. So yeah, iPads. You want to hear about iPads, kids? We got iPads for you.
Here we go. Come on. What? So if it's a whole new line of iPads. What caught your attention?
Okay. Right. As you say, whole new line of iPads. We have the iPad Air and we have the iPad Pro. I think the iPad Air only has one. No, it's got. They've all got two screen sizes, don't they? They're like
there's an 11-inch and a 13-inch version for the Air and for the iPad Pro.
Yeah, yeah. So that's what we have to deal with. A little bit more screen real estate. Oh, another big change was they have moved from mini LED to OLED on their displays. So a little bit brighter, a little bit more contrast. That's always nice to hear. I suppose there's two things that are really worth talking about. And that's not to say, you know, other stuff wasn't, but one thing was not discussed in the presentation. And that is the pricing for a device that you just might call iPad. Just the basic model. You go onto applestore.ie. You don't look for iPad Air. You don't look for iPad Pro. You look for iPad, and you will see yourself happen upon possibly the most intriguing development of the day, in that you have a vaguely affordable iPad that you can start with. Oddly enough, the iPad vanilla version is cheaper than the current iPad mini. I think it comes in at what, 440, 449 euros. Whereas the iPad mini is, as I said, a little bit more. Let me just check the price here.
$449 for a regular iPad.
Yeah,
this is not the latest version iPad. It's just a regular iPad. It's €449. That gets you 64 gig of disk space on the unit itself. It's a 10-inch screen. Not an M1, M2, M3 or M4 processor. It's the old A10.
Yeah.
But do you know what? For a really nice iPad that is well made, and if you're in the Apple ecosystem, great unit. Don't know if it's worth €450.
You, the mini is more than €200 euros on top of that. It's starting at 619. So nearly €200 euros for a much smaller device. So if you want a good deal and don't necessarily want to buy a secondhand iPad, look at the basic iPad. For me, that was one of the more interesting developments of the week. Something that just kind of snuck out there. But it's there and it's quite nifty. Let's talk about the iPad Air, because is there that much to talk about with it? I mean, you're looking at it's an Air, so straight away you're assuming it's going to be lighter and thinner than its predecessor. That's fine. To see that it goes up to 1 terabyte in storage for something the size it is, which is that kind of 11 to 13 inch kind of size. Yeah. I think that's pretty good. And of course, we are on USB-C, worth mentioning until the end of time, to be honest. Don't call it a climb down, Dusty. Don't call it a climb down.
I just think it's funny because the iPads that they announced are fantastic and I love them, and I'm normally the one to go tramp all over Apple. That's all you've been doing for the last 5 minutes. It's so nice. It's like I have a week off. Listen, I have to say that when I was looking at the announcement and stuff like that, I was kind of go, oh yeah, wow. Yeah, no, I like this. I like the fact that the Air is kind of, and the Pro as well. I've got 13-inch screens. The way they were selling, especially on the iPad Pro, because they've put in an M4 processor, everybody's kind of expecting, well, maybe they'll bump it up to an M2 or maybe an M3 or whatever. No, they've come out with a brand new M4 processor. It's like, whoa, it's the only thing from Apple that has the M4 processor. Then they have this tandem OLED thing, which is kind of like, Okay, so it's like an OLED screen, but they kind of, it's still not bright enough for when you're out in the sunshine. So what they've done is they've put two of them together, hence the word tandem or dual. And apparently it performs very, very well in sunlight, which is great. A lot of people giving out about the fact that they've moved the camera, because the camera used to be up on the narrow edge of the unit, whereas now it's on the longer edge, and that is a problem for the pen, because if you have an Apple Pen from a previous unit, you can't now use it with the new one. Now, just because they've moved it, I don't know why.
Does that mean there is a new Apple Pen to solve this problem?
Of course there's a new Apple Pen there to solve this problem, like, you know, and it's only €149. Uh-huh. And it will only work with the iPad Pro, the latest high-end model and stuff like that. What I thought was really interesting was that the iPad Pro is actually lighter than the iPad Air. Now, we're talking grams, so you would never notice, like, physically.
Yeah.
But technically, the Pro is lighter than the iPad Air. And I thought they sold it really well. But coming back to what you said about the price, I kind of said to myself, do you know what? I think I will. I'll get an Air. Why not? I haven't had one in ages. Mm. I really like my MacBook Air. Having a nice little tablet there, a nice light one and stuff like that, blah, 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 blah. I think I'll go for the 13-inch one. All right, so I looked it up on online. The 13-inch Apple iPad Air is $1,000.
Wow.
And it was the first thought in my head. I went, we're paying €1,000 for a tablet.
Yeah. Yeah, you could just go out and buy a MacBook Air.
But this is it. A MacBook Air actually wouldn't cost that much more. And that's where I think the pricing is going to be a problem for them, in that it's back to what do you use an iPad for? Do you know what I mean? It's kind of like it's just for browsing the internet, maybe looking at YouTube or whatever. Mm. I don't know anybody who uses a MacBook Air for big, heavy tasks. I know that you had the Microsoft Surface.
Mm. Yeah.
Now, that was the tablet you had that came with the keyboard, yeah?
Yeah, wasn't it?
So it's the same kind of a deal. Like, here's a tablet that you can use as a laptop. Mm. Did you like that idea? Did you not like that idea?
It was fantastic. It was really fantastic for lightweight productivity stuff, which is what I needed it for and what Microsoft pitched as. It was exceptional. It was really good. Yeah. Now, my favorite piece of tech that I have at home is, at this stage now, it's almost a 10-year-old iPad with a Logitech cover slash keyboard, Bluetooth cover slash keyboard. And the keyboard, I think, was like €49. It was on sale at the time, but was precisely what I was looking for. The iPad, oh goodness, can't remember how much that was at the time, but still usable, still great. I think all the apps are still usable on it. Now, I mean, I am completely aware that the technology has far surpassed it, but in terms of what I need it for, it is perfect.
Well, there you go. And this is my point, right? What you need it for. Okay. So that particular case was for light productivity. So if you're sending some emails and that kind of stuff and you have your keyboard attached to it, but would you be editing video on it?
Oh, no.
Would you do some heavy-duty graphic editing and photo editing? Would you edit audio on it? No, of course you wouldn't, all right?
No.
It's not that kind of a unit. It's light-use kind of stuff. Mm. And what I feel is what they're giving us is they're giving us their best processor, really, really good screen. You can buy a keyboard to go with it and have a pencil and all of that kind of stuff. And for $2,000, you've got something that can do light work reasonably well. For $2,000. Including the keyboard, because the keyboard is $400.
Oh, come on.
No, I'm serious. If you want to have the keyboard, the Pro, the 13-inch Pro is $1,300. Keyboard is $400 on top of that. And then add in your pencil, $150. That brings it up to just under $2,000.
Yeah, look, it's just like, getting off
I'm
brand
just gonna
keyboard.
Buy a MacBook. Yeah, or not even that. I'd buy a MacBook. The MacBooks are fantastic, as we know. So I think for the use case, it's too expensive, but there is no denying that these are fantastic units.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Also bear in mind that it's been 2 years since we had an iPad announcement, right? Mm. So whatever they announced this week, they probably have a 2-year roadmap on it. iPhones seem to be every year iPads every other year. And I can live with that. I mean, the fact that it bypassed an M3 chip to go to an M4 shows that they, you know, there you go. There's a clue right there.
Yeah, I have to say, one of my favorite bits of tech over the last couple of years is the Samsung Book laptop. Yeah. All right, super thin, super light. I got the one that can bend over, so you can use it like a tablet, and it comes with a pen. And I think I paid somewhere in the region of $1,200 for it. Okay, everything that this iPad Pro does, but it's an actual PC. And then for the use cases I was talking about, I had a very specific use on the computer. I needed something that I wanted on a second screen. All right, from my regular computer. And I had an app that I could use on a phone or a tablet or something like that. But I didn't have, the tablets I had were all old. So I said, I'm not going out and buy an iPad. It's just for this one job. So I had a look at Amazon, which we were talking about, which is great for gadgets and computer accessories. And I got a brand of laptop, or not laptop, it's a tablet. It's called a Doogee, or a Dodgy, as I call it.
A Dodgy.
I think, what is it? D-O-O-G-E-E or something like that, right? But it's got a very recent and fast processor in it. It's got a whole ton of RAM in it. The screen is full HD, looks great. It's relatively light. It does exactly what I needed to do. It cost me 120 quid.
Wow.
All right. So that's it. And, you know, if I am just looking at YouTube or I'm looking at websites or just doing a bit of browsing, that's it. All right. If I bought the iPad Air, which I would love, I would do exactly the same thing. I would just be browsing the internet or maybe looking at YouTube. And I'm sorry, but I'm not paying a grand for that. Anyway, that's enough of iPads. One other quick note on keynotes and stuff like that, because we had Apple this week. Next week, if you're into this kind of thing, we've got Google in out. Their keynote is next Tuesday, is it now?
I think it's Tuesday.
Tuesday it is. All right. So we'll be expecting news on that on Android 15. Also more on Gemini AI. And then also you've just taken delivery of a Pixel 8a, haven't you?
Yeah, Pixel 8a. So I think this is going to be, A, standing for AI perhaps. I'll know a little bit more this time next week. But a very, very nice little unit it is too.
Excellent. Well, we'll hear more about that shortly. Three more stories to get through very quickly. We've only got about 7 minutes to do it. FTX is bankrupt, but they say they're going to pay off their debts. How?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, FTX, the grand, well, one of the grand disasters of crypto. Okay. Sam Bankman-Fried, the founder, has gone to prison for 25 years. He has left, or rather, the guy in place in situ now is a guy called John Ray III. And he is chief executive of FTX. And he says that, okay, we've got $16 billion in debt. This is big, big problem. But we can sell off our remaining assets and we can actually pay that off. And the reason he said that they can do this is because their debts were in dollars, but their assets are in crypto. And crypto's value has kind of surged since those debts were incurred. So there's a sizable chance that they may actually be able to pay off their debts, which is kind of interesting. I mean, at the moment, just at time of recording, Bitcoin is worth $56,800 per coin. I think it was much less than that when the FTX case went to court. So yeah, I mean, it is entirely possible that FTX will be able to sort of leave a clean slate behind it. I guess you might call that.
Cool. Also, kind of stateside, because I kind of think Bitcoin in the States and stuff like that. TikTok are, you know, kind of they're going under this thing where the US are saying that they have to separate from their parent company, ByteDance, or they'll face a ban in the United States. Yep. So in typical good old American fashion, TikTok is now going to court, taking the United States to court, saying that the ban is unconstitutional. It's against First Amendment freedom of speech rights. I think one of the interesting things that they have pointed out is they've said that this whole risk that TikTok poses to America is that it's a national security risk. All right. And what they have said is that those risks are unproven. They are all hypothetical.
It's because they're very good at hiding stuff.
Well, okay, maybe. But I just thought that's a good point. And nobody seems to have argued against that. They're all saying, yeah, it could be a risk, like, you know.
Yeah.
And the other thing that they've pointed out is that they do have, that they've set up a US data center specifically just to run TikTok in the States. And it's something that the US government can shut down at any time if they so wish. So anyway, that'll go on and on and on. Last story of the week for your mobile phone, a little gift from Netflix is Sonic the Hedgehog. You're a gamer. You must have played Sonic.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We all did. I mean, you couldn't get through the 90s without playing Sonic the Hedgehog. Between that and Super Mario Brothers. I mean, and Street Fighter 2. I mean, well, maybe the 80s. I mean, we all had a very good working knowledge of certain franchises. Sonic the Hedgehog coming to Netflix subscribers. I'm actually pretty excited about this. I'm probably one of those people that will sit down and just go, this will be a pleasant nostalgia trip. Yeah. And then 12 hours later, I'll be like, oh, dear.
I'm done. Yeah. What have I done? I'm quite sure if you were to buy it as an app, it'd probably cost you like €2 anyway. But Netflix have done, if you log into your Netflix onto your mobile phone, you download it as a separate app for whatever reason. And the only thing that kind of made me kind of go, what's going on here, was when I started playing it, it said, what's your public handle? And I was like, I don't want a public handle. I don't want anything to do with the public. My Netflix account is mine and it's private and I don't want anything going into the public. You have to have a public handle to play the game.
Oh, you're so grumpy.
I am indeed. So as it turns out, F off Netflix, which is the handle I chose, is not one that they would allow.
Aww. That's a shame.
So I can't remember what I went for. I probably went for ABCDEFU. Actually, do you know what? Just like the song, I should go back and try and change my handle and see if that works. Anyway, that is the news for this week. Niall, thanks as always for keeping us up to date.
From techcentral.ie, this is the award-nominated Tech Radio from techcentral.ie.
A few years ago, we had NFT, non-fungible tokens, which allowed people to buy and sell what you might call proven originals of digital assets like JPEGs or GIFs using blockchain. Now, for a while, as we know, they were the thing until AI came along, swept away our attention, and the NFT market collapsed after that. However, that's not to say that NFT as a thing is an expensive or passing fad. Tyler Adams is co-founder of Item Systems, and he had a chat with Niall Kitson about using very similar principles to NFT to verify ownership of things in the real world.
Tyler, when looking at Web3 and some of the technologies that have been bundled together under this heading, I suppose, of a more kind place, a more kind of internet, if you will, a nicer space for people to innovate in. One of the first casualties of it, I think, has been non-fungible tokens or NFTs. I think part of that issue may have been that it was a technology that seemed kind of frivolous, that arrived at a time when we were about to experience a global pandemic and people really circled their metaphorical wagons, making sure that they only needed or they only owned what they needed in order to survive. Really, I think it came down to that level. Do you think that the pandemic was an inflection point for non-fungible tokens, or was this always going to be a technology with a limited lifespan?
I suppose that certainly could have an impact on this market. I think there are a lot of parallels to the NFT cycle, to the fungible token cycle that happened in 2017, 2018 time period, which kind of deflated the blockchain market and that wave. And in a lot of cases with blockchain, people talk about them in waves, right? So we had, there were these two token waves that have occurred. I think one of the biggest things that we're seeing in this industry is kind of a search for utility. And in that search, like, people create something new and interesting. So they push it out into the world, and then other people see that and they say, oh, this is, you know, very interesting. I want to also play around with it and try it out. And that is pretty common in novel technology. People see something new, they want to play with it to understand it and see if they can find a utility. I think what we've run into with some of the fungible tokens, and what happened is that it sort of became like a snake chasing its own tail a little bit, where at some point there was and there are projects which are kind of digging for utility in NFTs, but a lot of the generation kind of lost that goal or that target. Like, all these projects, they are generating NFTs for the sake of generating NFTs because they see there's a market for NFTs, and they're not actually looking to build on top of the technology to generate like core utility. And I mean, that's like textbook kind of inflationary hype cycle type of stuff. To me, that's the biggest impact here, at least in terms of like the hockey sticking on the valuation of these tokens. You do raise a really good point, though, that like during COVID, people, you know, they were trying to secure themselves, right? There was there was a literal lockdown, but there was also kind of an asset, like a figurative lockdown as well, regarding people spending. At the same time, though, people did have more liquid assets that they weren't spending outside of their homes. There was a lot more time on the computer, which we actually saw in the industry as well. So it's hard for me to say. I do think that like the interest in NFTs was definitely like, there was some contributing factor there for COVID. If I'm being honest, I agree on that. I don't have any data to like correlate the two.
Yeah. And so now we're moving into, I suppose, this second wave of, or I suppose if you were to look at crypto as being a first wave, NFTs as being a second, from your perspective, you're into sort of a third wave of tokenization with NFIs. So fill us in a little bit on NFIs and how they differ from NFTs.
Sure. So NFIs are non-fungible items. You can think of them as being like maybe a painting or a hat or a shirt or a ring or even like a mural on the side of a building. And they are physical objects that are cryptographically bound to the blockchain, using a kind of a physical asset and digital twin type of relationship. And the digital twin side of this technology has some similarities to an NFT, but there are a lot of additional cryptographic capabilities built into them that allow the asset itself to be tracked and managed in a decentralized way. And one of the kind of the driving value propositions of blockchain in this is that like blockchain is really this technology layer that, just because of the decentralized nature, it exists outside of any individual entity, right? That's kind of the concept that we all push in this space. Physical assets are actually very similar to that. So there are a lot of correlations. I'm trying to think of a good example. I have a file here. If I give you this file, you own the file. I can't like go go to talk to somebody to like have you give me the file back without it being a big issue. And that's kind of why this technology works. It's kind of a natural thing. One of the big benefits of this, obviously, is that the physical assets are all counterfeit proof. They are cryptographically verifiable. We're actually unable to create a copy, even if we wanted to. They can be, if they're lost, damaged, or stolen, the individual can verify that they're the owner. If there's like a secondary market, so you can imagine something is stolen, like a handbag, and it goes to like a pawn shop or something like that, the pawn shop can verify that the person selling it to them is not the owner of the product and can contact the actual owner in an encrypted kind of safe way. You can also do things like building out applications that use these verifiably authentic assets as well. So we just did a waypointing experience with a local brewery and one of our partners, which is an international mural festival called Worldwide Walls, specifically the Denver Walls chapter, where people could go and they could visit these plaques that we have all throughout the city of Denver, to see these world-class murals. And if they visit them and can prove that they visited two of them by interfacing with the NFI that's attached to them, they can redeem it on the blockchain for a free beer. So as this technology starts to proliferate, what I'm hoping to see is that they sort of become more of an infrastructure tool than NFTs, where there was more of a kind of a tradability, a collectability. Certainly, I think this technology lends itself very well to that. But what I'm really hoping for, and what our team is pushing for, is this idea that it's an infrastructure technology that's deployed that people can build on top of. So they can build like the next generation of applications where people can actually use these physical assets to do different things. So that's really what we're pushing for. And, as you kind of mentioned, there are a lot of parallels to NFTs. This is definitely a Phoenix technology, or we're iterating on that non-fungible tokenization concept to really drive like core utility. This is kind of what we feel is the utility that came out of all of those lessons learned and that trial and error from that NFT market cycle.
Yeah. And in looking at what you're working on at the moment, and I think it was one of the great failures of NFTs, was looking at the idea that you can prove ownership of something. When you look at a piece of art, because we know that the art world is rife with counterfeiting and things being sold that aren't what they purported to be, painted by or created by. I can see this as sort of being a solution to that problem, where you can track something from creation all the way to market. Is this something that you would have had in mind in creating the technology?
Well, to be honest, what I had in mind was going to Las Vegas and playing like Dungeons and Dragons with my friends in a real environment where like we have all of our shirts and our hats that have different properties and we can scan them to get access to secure doors. That's what I originally was thinking of. But the art consideration was also on front of mind, specifically for one of my colleagues who has kind of a vested interest in that industry. The art industry is is really interesting, especially because it's tied very closely to the blockchain space. So we have a lot of close collaborators who kind of play within both of those spaces. And the idea of having an NFT and the art has been very appealing, right? I was just at ETH Denver, and they always have an auction there for physical art. And then there's the NFT that's on OpenSea, right? And all the bidding is done on OpenSea. You go and you bid on the NFT, and then the NFT is transferred to you. And then you get the art. What we're trying to do that's different there, and this is actually a really good example of the difference, is that in that scenario, those two things are decoupled. Like, you could trade the NFT to somebody and then not give them the painting, for example, right? Or the painting could get destroyed, and like, they're not really tied still. It's more of a certificate of authenticity, which is very similar to the current way that art is handled, right? You get art and then it's authenticated, and then you're given a certificate that you keep somewhere else for things like insurance, right? In this technology, the art itself is actually the thing that's cryptographically bound on chain. And even without the blockchain, it can prove its authenticity. So there's nothing on earth that can decouple those two things. So if the art is destroyed, it's gone. I think it's important to acknowledge that it's gone. The token still exists, but you lose your ability to prove that the art exists, right? So you still have the digital twin, but you don't have the art, so you can't actually prove that the physical asset exists anymore. And that's kind of an important differentiator when it comes to things like sales, right? So if you're doing like a remote sale of a physical asset, there's no, if you don't have the physical asset, there's no way for the person on the other end that's buying the token to know that. And in this case, you can do that, because you ask them, you don't even ask them, you basically ask for the art to authenticate itself.
So in looking then at sort of those high value areas, I suppose luxury goods, I suppose art, there's a natural home here. Where do you see there being applications, for want of a better term, at ground level? Are we going to see NFIs managing supply chains, managing brands in the shelves, so companies know how much inventory they need to carry or manufacture? What sort of applications do you see happening?
Yeah, so you touched on a really important point here. Since we've primarily talked about retail, a retail level where somebody purchases these, they are an artist who's painting, or they're going up to a mural, for example, to scan it. So that's another use case we've implemented. Total lifecycle management is also a very interesting thing for a lot of these product manufacturers, right? Since a lot of these physical assets that this technology would be integrated with historically have had very poor access to lifecycle tracking and management, right? So you can imagine if you have a shirt or a hoodie or something like that, or even a handbag, the process of because it's not tech enabled, it's very difficult to manage a unique ID number outside of a lot identifier, right? Especially at kind of a component level. So by integrating this technology, a lot of these the suppliers also get access to that type of analytics, right? So you can imagine if you have a product that's in the market that you've embedded with this technology upstream in the manufacturing process, you get to be the beneficiary of all of that data privately, right? But then there's also this public database or data set with like the provenance, for example, of the product that's available publicly. But then you can also, based on that manufacturing data, trigger like targeted recall requests, for example, or service requests. And I think the cool thing about that is that these this infrastructure supports the secondary market, right? And what I mean by that is, like, if you have a jacket, right? Typically, like, if you the primary acquirer, like the original purchaser is the one that's going to register for like warranties and service and things like that. If they sell that on a secondary market, usually like either it doesn't qualify or they're not going to register for this because they may not know to, they may not know how. A lot of this contact information, because the product is tech enabled, right? The manufacturer, because they also have the tracking and they have the ability to contact the physical asset itself, they can more easily kind of securely introduce like requests for things like service or recalls or things like that, or maintenance. So that's also kind of an interesting use case, or I guess value proposition for the technology. Regarding like like where we may see this on the market outside of these like really high level or high end products, the technology is economic or economical at scale. So it's not something that I think will be limited to like a bronze plaque on a wall or like a very expensive handbag or like a painting that's worth, you know, thousands of dollars or hundreds of thousands of dollars. I mean, we're pushing for this to be at a, probably not like on like a $4 t-shirt, for example, but certainly at a price point that's affordable for people, because the more supply that's in the market, the better the utility of this technology is. Right, because it's kind of a peer-to-peer product, it's kind of important to have the volume and the exposure to it, so people are aware. Right, you could have a tech-enabled handbag. So if it's stolen, like the pawn shop can contact you, but if the pawn shop doesn't know that they can do that, your handbag is gone. Right, so. The awareness is kind of a critical factor here. I think, again, I want to go to Vegas to play, like to fight dragons with my friends and open like treasure chests and things. So for me personally, I need the price point to be at a place where like we can have hoodies and hats and t-shirts and things with the technology in it. Like we're also looking, we're targeting kind of from a painting kind of art market. If you can imagine like the paintings being the premium, like we're really pushing, we would be pushing to be like at a print level kind of a thing. Like that's the price target, where it's economical, where people could go into a store and if they're buying a print, right, they would have access. Or like a hoodie on the market, or rings, like I think the rings we were giving out at Consensus, like they're like $50 to $100 rings kind of a thing. So economical.
And that was Tyler Adams, co-founder of Item Systems, chatting with our Niall Kitson. You can find out more about Tyler and everything he's been talking about on their website, which is item.systems. And that link in the show notes for you right now, as always.
This is Tech Radio with Dusty Rhodes and Niall Kitson.
That's it for our show this week. Do check out some of the other stories that are online we didn't have time to chat about in the podcast, including Niall.
Yeah, we've got some good news about a company behind an audio device that treats vertigo. We have a new co-center for research into water, biodiversity and climate that brings together centers from Ireland, Northern Ireland and the UK. And also Microsoft reevaluates its stance on security.
You will find those and other stories online at techcentral.ie right now. We're back again next Friday, as always, with a brand new show online and on RT Radio 1 Extra. And do remember, please share our podcast with a friend if they're into tech. Just tell them to look up Tech Radio Ireland on Apple, Spotify, or now also available on YouTube. Until next week, from myself, Dusty Rhodes, and from Niall Kitson, as always, have a great weekend. Take care.
Remember, you can get the latest Irish tech news with hourly updates, daily newsletters, and more at our website, techcentral.ie. Share the knowledge and invite a friend to listen. Search Apple, Spotify, or YouTube for Tech Radio Ireland, or listen with RTE Radio 1 Extra. Tech Radio is produced by dustpod.io for techcentral.ie. From me, Artemis, live long and prosper.